a relatively simple technique. It's a technique which is used on any case, but it, of course, does not supplant the knowledge which an auditor has of cases. It doesn't supplant processes for emergency assist. It doesn't supplant your general knowledge of communications. It certainly doesn't supplant advanced course procedure. It is a relatively simple process. Where you would find this process of the greatest use is that case with which you're having the greatest difficulty. You can exteriorize anybody, whether a step 1 or step 12, with this process. But, again, any pre-clear you have is having some of the trouble which is solved by this process. So we look at this then as something an auditor can use with comfort, which will exteriorize an individual. Now, we don't say in how many hours it'll exteriorize an individual. It'll exteriorize him in as many hours as his case is difficult. Of course, a step 1, it'll exteriorize a step 1 immediately. A step 1 really is better run on advanced course procedure than on 8D. A step 1 is very, very easy to run, and the essence of a step 1 is that you should get him into circulation as soon as possible. Get him into some a grand tour and change the space and so forth. If he's exteriorized with certainty, don't fool around very much in the early stages. Just get him out and give him a grand tour and give him some change of space and remedy his havingness and pat him on the head and say that's fine. Now, if you want to push him up any further, however, you will have to address the problems of ownership and universes. So on a step 1, really, you'd use this late. You'd use 8D late in the case, really. And on a step 5, you'd use it right off the bat. It doesn't mean that you couldn't run this just on a step 1, just as given, but I just say there are faster ways of doing a step 1 than 8D. All right, let's take a look at 8D. What is it? It is a collection of processes, each one of which have been found to facilitate exteriorization and balance up the case of a pre-clear. Each one of these processes is itself unlimited. And being an unlimited process, 8D, of course, could be run over and over and over. But I give you this admonition. 8D should be run over and over and over as 8D. There are two processes. If you're going to start running 8D, you run it over and over and over as 8D. And the two processes contained in 8D, which we're going to describe here at a little more length, we call these processes universe processing, and the other process is ownership processing. These are two processes. These processes snap universes apart. Ownership processing snaps a lower level of universe. I mean, a case that is having a more difficult time. The two processes can be used in conjunction, or they can be used separately. But they are never used, and please establish this fairly well. They are never used under any circumstances all by themselves. We should use any type of process which balances the case between these two things. One, practically spinning in, and the other, present time. Now, you'll find a case being run on a very rough process, extremely rough process, has a tendency to bog on you. That doesn't mean that you should run away from every bog. Of course the individual will bog. It doesn't mean that you should go on your way and forget about the case if it's practically spinning. But a case, you know, can get into a situation where it's just impossible to run any further. So, it's time for you to lighten it up a little bit. See that? And then there's cases that you can run so lightly, so you don't push in at all, that they're really not getting much benefit out of what you're processing. So neither one of these processes, such as universe processing or ownership processing, are used individually. They are used actually in company with this pattern, 8D. That's to keep the case from bogging. Let's say you've run one of the processes until you got a quiet needle on an E-meter. Would you then immediately take off on some other personnel with universe processing? No, you wouldn't. You would go back to step opening procedure of 8D, and you'd go right on through with the new personnel. But let's then realize that this is a package process which is in itself designed to keep a case fairly well in contact with present time, and at the same time take out of the case itself its heaviest identifications. The first step of 8D is a very simple step, but it should be run very precisely. There's a great deal of technology back of this first step, a great deal of technology back of any one of these steps, and that's why they're run simply. You have the preclear there in the auditing room with you. You ask him to move around the room. That's his body, you see. Move around the room and locate spots in space. Spot them. Put his finger on them. Designate them. Spots in space. And you have him locate spots in space with great precision until he's able to do this. You'll discover that Preclear is having a great deal of difficulty. Will locate the spot in space and then slide off suddenly, swish, onto an object. He may only be able to hold the spot in space 3 or 4 seconds. And if an auditor were doing opening procedure with great rapidity, he'd miss the fact that the fellow can spot the spot in space, all right, but his attention immediately went over onto a solid object, swish. The motto of all solid objects is stick together or come to me. And as a result, his attention is compelled over onto solid objects out of any empty space he looks at. This idea of not being able to look at empty space is very significant in a case. An individual who is unable to look at space, of course, is unable to have space. So let's look at this opening procedure then as a method whereby the auditor can see whether or not the preclear is running when he's asking him to run. A method whereby the auditor can change the preclear in space enough times so that the preclear will follow his auditing commands. A process whereby the preclear can get over his nervousness about the auditor. This will save you as much as 8 or 9 hours on the beginning of a case, so it's well worthwhile doing this. You could do this for 2 minutes or 2 hours. After you've done it once or twice with the preclear, as you run down 8D, you will discover that you don't have to do it as long. But again, you should do it every time you start through 8D again, opening procedure. You should at least take a pass at it. It's not as important later on in auditing sessions, which is why we're calling it opening procedure on it. Because right at the beginning, this is the one you stress regardless of what case there is. Now, let me tell you this. There are several cases around which have started to go upgrade on opening procedure of 8C and opening procedure of 8D. They're practically the same, except opening procedure of 8D specializes on space. There are several cases which have started to go upgrade, and the second they really start to get the feel of this, the auditor has switched off onto other processes. He's done this too fast. He's done it too soon. The truth of the matter is, these cases are actually so bad off that nothing will work on them in terms of process but opening procedure. If opening procedure were run on these cases for 5, 6, or 7 hours, 30 or 40 hours of processing would be saved. In other words, these cases are pretty bad off. And the auditor errs when he thinks that, well, we run opening procedure so we can get into something hot in the case. Well, this case is in so much hot material right away that the safest course would be to run opening procedure and call that the process. Just run it. Say, we are processing him. The auditor has a tendency, you see, to say, well, opening procedure, that's how we get around to doing some auditing. and he quits opening procedure before the case is open. Opening procedure should be run until the case is open, accessible, and in good communication with the auditor. Someday you will see a pre-clear case, maybe even a step 7 SOP 8 type pre-clear. Just case just breaks smithereens on opening procedure. It is a process, and a valuable process. In the first place, the pre-clear cannot fool the auditor. And in lower-level pre-clears, the only reason auditing doesn't bite them is because they're not doing what the auditor says. Opening procedure is a sure cure of this. You have the individual move around the room and find spots in space and actually pinpoint them with his finger after he spotted them. Nail them down, you might say. And you just have him do this spot after spot after spot after spot. Yes, he's going to go through a strata called boredom. I have seen pre-clears start to scream when asked to do this 20 or 30 times. You'd expect them to get down and pound the floor. Well, that's what's wrong with them. They don't dare go on doing anything because this emotion, which you're observing as the auditor, is what turns on the second they start to do anything in life. You see, you just turned it on artificially in an auditing session. How'd you turn it on? You asked them to do the same thing with very slight variation over and over and over, and all of a sudden the fellow says, I can't do that another time. Well, what he's done in life, he gets a job. He goes to work the first morning, goes to work the second morning, third morning, he can't quite tolerate the idea of going to work. Fourth morning, he quits. He starts to pick up a brush and a canvas. He's going to do a painting once he had a little skill as a painter. He picks up the brush and canvas. He makes 3 marks, 4 marks. He runs up against that very emotion that you're seeing running in the auditing room. And he lays it down. He quits it. And there sits that canvas for the next year or so that he means to get around and do something about it. He can't tolerate a duplication, which means he can't tolerate communication, because communication is, in essence, duplication. Its graph is cause across a distance to effect. And a perfect communication is a duplication at effect of what was put into the line at cause. Now, that's a perfect communication. So duplication is an integral part of it. So you ask somebody to do something over and over and over. If he's having communication difficulty, he just feels like screaming. Life, you see, won't let him duplicate. All right, so opening procedure of 8D is quite important. It should be run well, and it should be run as long as it has to be run. That's a case for auditor judgment. I would run it until I found the pre-clear easy to run, not dodging, not dipping away, not arguing. I would just run it until it was easy to run. Oh, sure, you let the pre-clear scream and protest and slam around and say, well, I can't do that again, and so forth. Ask him to do it again, quietly, persuasively. Next thing you know, he'll have cracked through, you might say, the barrier boredom. Boredom is actually occasioned by an individual having had all the goals of existence blocked by barriers. Every time he starts to do something, a barrier has been erected in front of him, so that every time, eventually he gets to a point where every time he tries to do something, he expects a barrier to be there. Okay, let's go to the step 1 of 8D. We find this an extremely simple step. You ask the pre-clear to be 3 feet back of his head. That's all there is to step 1. There is nothing more to it. That's all there is. Yet this is the complete condensation of enough technology actually to fill several Encyclopedia Britannicas, because actually that action has filled several Encyclopedia Britannicas already. The Encyclopedia Britannica itself is written because people can't be 3 feet back of their head. Now, we look at this. You realize any time an individual says, I feel I'm trapped, I feel I'm caught, I feel I can't be mobile in life, I feel I'm pushed into this pattern, or I can't change my mind about things, anything he's saying like that, he's saying I'm trapped. He's afraid of going to hell. Why is he afraid of going to hell? Well, quite simply afraid of going to hell for the good and adequate reason that hell is a place where he'll be trapped. People are equally afraid of going to heaven. If our boys on the back track who invented religion only knew it, are equally afraid of going to heaven. Being stuck on a cloud for eternity? How unthinkably horrible. In other words, they have two horrors, of which two, hell is probably the more interesting. At least there's sensation in it. Now, where does your preclear shy off anytime he thinks he will be trapped or put in an unalterable position? He will shy away. Let's take the curve of existence, and we find out that it starts with create, goes through survive, and finishes with destroy. Create, survive, destroy. That's the cycle of action of the messed universe. Things go actually from a nothingness before creation to creation, through survival to destruction. Well, an individual who goes further and further away from creation in terms of just not liking it, you know, he doesn't like other people creating things all the time, and he finds that when he creates things, it's tiresome. He goes away from creation, and he will at the same time go away from destruction. In other words, instead of running the curve from create through survive to destroy, he's actually on the total curve all the time. Now, he starts backing off from creating things. He also starts backing off from destroying things. He's running just that much less of a curve. Now, he backs away more from creating and more from destroying and more from creating and more from destroying. And on this curve, which you could vision as a hump with survive at the top of it, he finally finds himself parked up there at the top. And that is survive. Persist. Go on forever and ever and ever as the same form in the same place. That's the reductio ad absurdum of all survival. Same form, same place, persisting forever. It becomes an intolerable thought to the preclear. In essence, in auditing, you're just trying to cure him of the intolerances which have finally parked him on the hump of this curve. You're trying to get him to a point where he isn't quite as frightened of persisting forever in one spot. And if you can, you can actually test the case to find out whether or not it's progressing at all. Is can it better now tolerate detestable viewpoints? As an individual begins to shy away from other people, he is, of course, getting away from other viewpoints. He's getting away from other beings. He's being more and more himself. He finally winds up as the only one. That's a complex, the only one. He's the only one that can do it. He's the only one that can have it. He's the only one that exists. And you'll finally wind up, the whole everything is illusion and there are no other viewpoints but the one which is where, right in the center of his head. The first edge into this, of course, is any entrapment. Now, an individual, in the first place, does not happen to be a body. There are several discoveries along the line, but probably the greatest single discovery in Scientology was the fact that an individual, the beingness, the personality, anything that you really consider to be the I, whether you call it id or skid, doesn't matter, but the I of the individual, was an energy production unit which could have any position in space, but which wasn't really in space. An individual is an energy production unit. Out of this, we get the mythology, the legends, anything that you want that has to do with spirits, with ghosts, so forth. People talk about these things and so on. Science today knows there's no such thing as a ghost. It knows there's no such thing as a ghost. You see, what it did is it makes this concept of the energy production unit ridiculous and then says that this ridiculous concept doesn't exist. You know, ghosts, clanking chains, haunts houses. The truth of the matter is, man is not a body. This is a very easy thing to demonstrate. Extremely easy to demonstrate. How is it easy to demonstrate? You take somebody who's not very bad off, who's, let's say, what we call a step one. We tell this individual, be 3 feet back of your head. This person be in pretty good shape. See? This person's very sick. All of the wonders of medicine have been able to do nothing for this person. You see, the person's sick. You say, be 3 feet back ahead. Is there anything you'd like to patch up about the body? Oh, there is. Your body's sick. All right. Well, patch it up. It's patched up. He's well the next day. A couple of thousand years ago, some boys came in here on this planet and did some miracles. For a couple of thousand years, everybody's been trying madly to repeat these miracles. Well, you as a Scientologist can repeat these miracles. on an infinitely greater number of cases than they were done on originally. How many miracles do you hear of? Well, the percentage is terrible. Just terrible. I mean, it's what, half of 1%. You got 100 sick people out here, and one of them, why, we almost do a miracle on them. You got a couple hundred people, and we get one miracle. Actuarially, it's a very low figure. Well, you can do miracles on 50% of the people you meet, which are of the same caliber. How would you do these? About 50% of the people you'd meet, you say, be 3 feet back of your head, give me some places where you're not. Duplicate a couple of things, let's get stabilized a little bit better, all right. Now let's mock up your body, now duplicate it several times till the fellow's used to looking at his body, and now you say, all right, is there anything you'd like to fix up about your body? Oh, I had some pinched nerves, a crippled foot, and this, zing, 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 boom. You've done the miracle. If you have been not entirely aware of why you were studying Scientology, it is this which is as good a thing as anything else you'll ever run into. Man, in all of his universities, in all of his churches, his seminaries, and so forth, has been studying to try to find how miracles were done. And you're sitting right there learning how a miracle's done. I mean, it's just as simple as this. If you were only able to produce miracles on 25% of the cases you applied Scientology to, in other words, if you were, just take the straight of the society at large, and you were only able to benefit even slightly, 25% of them, you would have come closer at this moment to achieving the final product that they had a couple of thousand years ago than any man has in 2,000 years. So that's a good reason to study it, isn't it? All right, let's look at this process then and recognize this process for what it is. A miracle production process. Now, we've worked harder and harder and harder to try to run up the averages. You know, I mean, what's the average percentage of the auditor? Well, how many more cases could he get? Well, we've been shooting for 100. This is an extreme and an illogical thing for us to do. We could be perfectly content with 2%, because by golly, that's two more than medicine, psychiatry, or witch doctoring accomplished in terms of a real full-blown miracle. Little girl here the other day, a couple of the boys were running a little child, crippled child charity project. A couple of boys located this kid, and this child had polio, and his grandparents had taken it and given it a bunch of rubdowns, the kidney treatment, and had actually gotten the child over polio without the child's parents knowing much about it. The child's parents not too interested in the child. However, polio left the child very deaf. The child still could hear. So they went to a doctor, medical doctor, and the medical doctor said, well, the deafness of the child is undoubtedly caused by adenoids and tonsils. So the child was operated on for the adenoids and tonsils, and of course emerged from those that operation totally deaf. Child was totally deaf for many years. A couple of Scientologists, been through this advanced course, two very good auditors, they pick up this kid, process this kid for a few hours. Kid goes home, tells grandma, they're in the living room, grandma, your pot's boiling over in the kitchen. Grandma says, oh, it is, you know, and goes on into the kitchen, gets halfway across the kitchen floor. She can hear. Miracle. All right, that is relatively routine. They just picked a kid who had something wrong with him, and they produced the results. This wasn't 89 kids they processed, of which one got well. No, this was just a case which got well, that's all. Now, this whole business of entrapment is a central subject about this universe. Entrapment. This energy production unit that the individual really is could be called and has been called his soul, his spirit, his this and that, but it's not really his anything, it's him. That is the slightly detached viewpoint which people had of this thing. See, it wasn't his anything. He couldn't ever have made the remark, I'm over there. You see, I'm over there. No, because anywhere he is here. Well, an individual can be caught, trapped. He can be caught very thoroughly by life. The police dramatize this. One of the worst things they can do to an individual is not kill him, but throw him in jail, trap him. This universe is a, you might say, a trap, and so on. Well, the whole subject of the trap is an energy production unit which can get caught in a mass, in a space, and then can't get out. And that's the definition of a trap. It's something in something it can't get out of. Now, an individual thinks he's a body. He thinks he is not an energy production unit. He thinks in terms of my soul is somewhere, probably in his hip pocket, who knows, only because he is in a trap called the body. Now, the body is more than a trap. It's a useful unit. It can be used as a puppet marionette. It can be made to do many things. It's cute. It can be dressed. It talks. It hears. If the individual wants it to talk and hear. But the body is very subject, very, very, very subject to the impulses of this energy production unit, because this energy production unit is the only therapeutic source in this entire universe. Now, where we have everyone's teaching concentrated on this one fact, you are a body, and where we have everyone's activity more or less concentrated on this body must survive, care of the body, care of the body, care of the body, we get an entire cult of survival in the society. We mustn't create anything. We mustn't destroy anything. The only thing we can do is survive as one being as long as possible. And this gets so much stress on it that an individual comes up away from create and destruction up to a point where he is persisting. And do you know that persistence itself has very, very little that is ready to recommend it? Because what is it? It's being in a trap. Individuals going along, he is unknowing on the subject of this, mostly because all the energy production he has is shooting through the body. He's feeling with the body and so forth, so he thinks, of course, he is the body. This energy production unit, which we call a thetan, can be a body. It can be anything. It can be a stove. It can be a sky. It can be almost anything. Knowingly, it knows what it's being, and it simply concentrates on being. Well, this was the end goal of religion. It was the end goal of a lot of things. We get down to this. The energy production unit gets convinced that it cannot get outside of the traps it gets into. And when it gets into the body, it's a trap. It's in the body. Trap. It's got to feel everything the body feels. It's got to do everything the body feels. And it feels that it's going to be dead when the body's dead because it's being a body. This is not true. It is not dead when the body's dead.